The air up here was still and heavy, pressing against Pearl's ears. It swirled around the skeletal ribs of the unfinished railway, tugging at her coat and threatening to pull her off the iron grating. She pressed herself against the cold steel, her breath pluming in the chill before dissolving into the dark. Below her, the city sprawled like a spilled box of matches, thousands of tiny yellow lights trembling in the haze. Above her, nothing but the black void and the occasional flash of lightning that turned the skyline into a stark, negative print. She checked the cylinder of her .32. One round. She had saved one for the man in the gray coat on Mott Street, and she had fired the other into the darkness when the shadow moved toward her throat. She didn't know if she'd hit him. She hoped she had, but hope was a luxury she couldn't afford up here. Up here, there was only the wind, the height, and the man standing at the far end of the girder, waiting for her. Sela's Vane looked exactly as he had in the townhouse on Fifth Avenue, immaculate, composed, untouched by the chaos that had consumed everyone else. He wore a heavy wool coat, tailored to hide the bulk of whatever he carried beneath it, and a fedora pulled low over his eyes. He didn't turn when he heard her boots scrape against the metal. He simply raised a hand, palm out, in a gesture that might have been a greeting or a warning. "You're persistent, Miss Casey," Vane said. His voice was carried away by the wind, so she had to step closer, the rivets digging into the soles of her shoes. "I admire that. Most people fold when the pressure mounts. They go home. They drink. They pretend the world is smaller than it is." "I'm not most people," Pearl said. Her voice sounded thin, swallowed by the vastness of the construction site. "And I know what you're building." Vane turned then. He smiled, a slow, sad expression that didn't reach his eyes. "Do you? The blueprints, the grease, the red marks?" He shook his head. "You have the pieces, perhaps, but you lack the picture. You think this is about theft, about sabotage. It is neither. It is about progress. It is about the inevitable." He took a step toward her. Pearl raised the revolver, her arm steady despite the tremor in her ankle. The pain was a hot wire running up her calf, but she ignored it. She focused on the space between his eyebrows. "It's about murder," she said. "Thomas Erickson, your man in the gray coat. The poison, you killed him because he saw the marks. You killed him because he knew the columns were rigged to fail." Vane sighed, a sound of genuine disappointment. Thomas was a sentimentalist. The workers deserved protection. He didn't understand that the insurance payout the collapse of the line would save the entire project. Without the crash, the investors would have walked. With it, they would double down. They would rebuild. Stronger. Safer. Faster. He gestured to the dark expanse of steel around them. "I am not a monster, Miss Casey. I am an architect. And architects must sometimes demolish the old to make room for the new." "You're a coward," Pearl said. "You hide behind gray coats and bribes. You don't get your hands dirty." "Someone has to," Vane said softly. "And I have done so, repeatedly. Do you think I enjoy it? Do you think I sleep well? I sleep because I know that when this city rises, it will rise because of me, because of my vision. Your little investigation is a distraction, a pebble in the gear, and I have removed pebbles before." He took another step. Now he was within arm's reach. Pearl could smell him expensive tobacco, lavender water, and underneath it, the sour tang of fear. He was afraid, not of her gun, but of the truth. Of the ledger she had burned, yes, but also of the evidence she still carried. The blueprints. The notes. The witness who might still be alive. "Give me the tube," Vane said. "Hand it over, and I will let you live. I will even help you find the man who shot at you tonight. I can make it disappear." "And if I refuse?" "Then you fall?" He smiled again. "It is a long way down, Miss Casey, 300 feet of empty air. The wind will tear the scream from your throat before you hit the ground. It will be quick. Messy, but quick." Pearl looked at the edge of the girder behind her. The bolts were loose, rusted through by years of neglect. She could feel the vibration of the city below, the rumble of the elevated trains that still ran on the adjacent tracks. The structure was alive, breathing, groaning under the weight of its own ambition. "You're wrong," she said. "I didn't come here to negotiate." She threw the canvas tube. Not at Vane. At the gas lamp hanging from a nearby support beam. The tube struck the glass with a sharp crack, shattering the flame and sending a shower of sparks into the wet air. Vane flinched, turning away from the sudden darkness, shielding his eyes with his arm. That was all the time she needed. Pearl lunged, not away from him, but toward him. She drove her shoulder into his chest, knocking him backward. He stumbled, his heels catching on the loose grating. He cried out a sharp, undignified sound and flailed for balance. Pearl grabbed his lapel, using his own momentum against him. She twisted, pulling him off center. Vane went over the edge. He didn't scream, he didn't reach for her. He simply fell, his coat flaring like the wings of a dying bird, disappearing into the blackness below. Pearl leaned over the edge, her heart hammering against her ribs, waiting for the sound of impact. There was none. Just the wind, and the distant wail of a train whistle. She stood there for a long moment, her hand still outstretched, her fingers curled as though she were holding onto something that was no longer there. Then she straightened up, wiped the rain from her eyes, and turned away. The blueprints were gone, the ledger was ash, Vane was dead or falling, but the railway stood. The columns held, and tomorrow, the sun would rise over a city that didn't know how close it had come to collapse. Pearl Casey touched the bus token in her pocket, felt its cold, hard edge against her thumb, and began the long walk back to the ladder. The descent was slower than the ascent. Her ankle screamed with every step, a white-hot lance of pain that made her vision swim. She gripped the rungs of the ladder with both hands, testing each one before putting her weight on it. The metal was slick with rain, treacherous and unforgiving. Below her, the construction site yawned like a mouth, dark and hungry. She didn't look down, she focused on the next rung, then the next, then the next. By the time she reached the ground, her legs were shaking so badly she could barely stand. She leaned against a stack of steel beams, gasping for air, the cold seeping into her bones. The rain had stopped, leaving the world washed clean and shimmering in the faint glow of the street lamps. A carriage passed in the distance, its wheels clattering over cobblestones. A dog barked somewhere in the alleys. The city was waking up, preparing for another day of work, of struggle, of survival. Pearl pushed herself upright. She adjusted her coat, checked the cylinder of her revolver one last time, and started walking. She didn't know where she was going. She only knew she couldn't stay here. Not yet. She turned onto Delancey Street, keeping to the shadows, moving toward the Bowery, toward the tenement, toward the life she had almost lost. Behind her, the unfinished railway stood silent against the dawn, a monument to ambition and ruin. And ahead of her, the gray morning waited, indifferent and endless. The stairs to apartment 4 groaned under her weight, the warped wood protesting with every step. Pearl counted the landing's 3 flights of creaking timber, each one echoing through the thin walls of the Bowery building. She moved slowly, deliberately, her hand resting on the .32 at her hip. The hallway outside Alina's door was dark, lit only by the faint glow from the street lamp below. She could hear the faint sound of breathing steady, rhythmic, asleep. She pushed the door open. Alina Rossi lay on the narrow bed, her face pale in the moonlight filtering through the grimy window. Her children were curled around her, a tangle of limbs and blankets. Pearl stepped inside, closing the door softly behind her. The floorboard creaked, and Alina stirred. For a second, the woman's eyes flew open, wide with terror. Then she recognized Pearl. She let out a breath that sounded like a sob, her shoulders dropping. "Pearl," she whispered, "is it over?" Pearl didn't answer right away. She walked to the table, where the canvas tube lay. She unrolled it, spreading the blueprints across the scarred wood. The red X's glowed in the dim light, stark and accusing. "Vane is dead," she said. Alina froze, her hand tightened around the blanket. "Dead." "He fell," Pearl said. "From the railway, he tried to take the plans, he failed." Alina closed her eyes. When she opened them, they were wet. "Did he hurt you?" "No," Pearl touched her ankle, wincing slightly. "But I'm not done, not yet." She pointed to the map. "Look here, this isn't just the Grand Central Line. It's the whole network, every third column. If they don't fix it, the next train to hit these marks will bring the whole thing down. Hundreds of people." Alina leaned forward, squinting at the paper. "Who will believe us? The police, the newspapers, they work for him." "They worked for him," Pearl corrected. "Now they work for whoever takes his place. And whoever that is, they won't know about the marks. Not yet. We have time, maybe not much, but enough." She rolled the blueprints back up. "I need to get these to someone who can stop the construction, someone who doesn't answer to Vane's successors." Alina hesitated. Then she reached under her pillow and pulled out a small, folded piece of paper. "My brother," she said. "He works for the Tribune. He's honest. I can send him." Pearl took the paper. It was a name, an address, and a phone number. "Do it," she said. "Tonight, before sunrise." Elena nodded. She pulled the blanket up to her chin, suddenly looking very small. "Will they come for us? The men in gray coats?" Pearl looked at the window. The street below was empty, for now. "No," she said, "they won't, not tonight." But she wasn't sure if she believed it. The Tribune building on Park Row was a fortress of stone and ink. Pearl stood outside the service entrance, the blueprints tucked inside her coat, her heart pounding in her ears. She had sent Alina's brother a note, promising information that would topple the Vane Empire. She hadn't told him what the information was, only that it was real, only that it was urgent. She rang the bell. No answer. She rang again. Still nothing. Pearl frowned. It was past midnight. The night editor should be at his desk. The press should be running. The building should be alive with noise and light. Instead, it was dark. Silent. Dead. She tried the door. It was locked. She looked around. The alley was empty. The streetlights cast long, wavering shadows against the brick walls. She could hear the distant hum of the city, but here, in this pocket of darkness, there was only the wind. Then she saw him. A man in a gray coat stood at the far end of the alley, leaning against a lamppost. He wasn't moving. He wasn't speaking. He was just watching. Pearl's hand went to her revolver. She drew it slowly, keeping the barrel hidden in the folds of her coat. "Go away," she said. The man didn't move. "I said go away." He pushed himself off the lamppost and started walking toward her. His steps were slow, deliberate. He didn't rush. He didn't need to. He knew she had nowhere to go. Pearl backed up until her spine hit the brick wall. She raised the gun, aiming at his chest. "I'll shoot," she said. "I mean it." The man stopped. He tilted his head, studying her. Then he smiled. "You can't shoot me, Miss Casey," he said. His voice was smooth, cultured, familiar. "Because I'm not the one you're afraid of." "Who are you?" "A friend," he said, "or what's left of one." He reached into his pocket. Pearl tensed, her finger tightening on the trigger, but he didn't pull out a gun. He pulled out a key. Brass, worn at the bow, teeth cut in a standard pattern. It was the key from Thomas Erickson's hem. "How did you get that?" Pearl asked. "I found it," the man said, "after you dropped it in the gutter." Pearl stared at him. "Why are you giving it to me?" "Because Vane is dead," the man said. "And because you're not safe. Not yet. There are others. Men who don't answer to Vane, men who don't care about insurance payouts or progress. They just want the key, and they'll kill for it." He held out the key. "Take it, run, and don't look back." Pearl didn't take it. She kept the gun trained on him. "Who are you?" The man smiled again. It was a sad smile, a tired smile. "My name is Doyle," he said. "Sergeant Michael Doyle, and I'm sorry it took me this long to find you." Pearl lowered the gun. Her hands were shaking, not from fear, from relief. "Doyle," she said, "but Holloway." "Holloway is compromised," Doyle said. "He's been on Vane's payroll for years. That's why he tried to stop you. That's why he confiscated the evidence. I've been working undercover, trying to get proof, but I couldn't move until Vane was out of the picture." He stepped closer, extending the key. "Now he's gone, and you're the only one who knows the truth, so take the key, go home, lock your door, and wait for me." Pearl looked at the key, then at Doyle, then at the dark window of the Tribune. "What happens now?" she asked. "Now," Doyle said, "we finish this." He turned and walked away, disappearing into the shadows. Pearl stood alone in the alley, the cold biting at her skin, the key burning in her hand like a promise she wasn't sure she wanted to keep. Behind her, the city slept. Ahead of her, the dawn waited. And in the middle, Pearl Casey stood, caught between the past and the future, wondering if she had the strength to bridge the gap. She put the key in her pocket. She turned and walked toward the street. She didn't look back. She couldn't, not yet. The wind picked up, howling through the alleys, carrying the scent of rain and iron and something else, something sharp and metallic, like blood. Pearl pulled her coat tighter around her. She walked faster. She didn't stop. She couldn't. Not until she was home. Not until she was safe. Not until she was free. But freedom was a luxury she couldn't afford. Not yet. She had work to do. And the city was watching. Always watching. Waiting. Listening. Pearl pulled her collar tight against the biting wind, letting the fog erase her from the street until she was nothing more than a shadow moving through the dark.